So in Leviticus 19, as we kind of continue this, verse 19 is this mixing of kinds that we looked at last time. And then starting verse 20 to 22, you have the second law of a man lying with a slave woman. By the way, this is the very center verse of all of the Torah, all five books. This is the center verse, and it has atonement in it. Isn't that interesting? The priest shall make atonement for him. So you have mixing, and then you have lying with a woman, which is a seed. And then you have 23 and 20 through 25 is verses about fruit, bearing fruit. So you can see there's a metaphor going on there for life. And then we come to this interesting little couple of verses that are totally different. So let's just look at these and tell me what you think. And if somebody had, just like last week, where we kind of said, well, what happens if I have an animal valve in my heart? Somebody might have one of these going on in their body. Okay, we're still going to deal with it. You shall not eat any flesh, verse 26, with the blood in it. You shall not interpret omens or tell fortunes. You shall not round off the hair on your temples or mar the edges of your beard. You shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead or tattoo yourselves. I am the Lord.
I just got a haircut yesterday and I was thinking of that very verse. I had him trim up my beard and I'm like, what does that mean? I'm literally sitting there in the chair while he's doing this and I'm sitting here going, I'm down in the corners of my beard.
So I think it was more this one, when you cut your hair off that way, it probably would be more what it was.
But I was wondering if it had to do with, because it's talking about tattoos and stuff here, I was wondering if it had to do more with resemblance of the gods, of, appearances of trying to be identified with something versus just hygiene.
So let's do what we've been trying to think through here. First of all, let's see if we can identify, do you see anything civil here, civil law? I'm getting a big fat zero on that one. How about anything ceremonial law? Anybody want to say yeah? I'm hearing some yeses on that one. What makes you say yes to ceremonial law on this?
First one's the blood and the meat.
Okay, and what does that make you think of?
It was lifeblood that we weren't supposed to partake of in ceremonial feasts and
right,
stuff
right.
In Leviticus, isn't it?
Right. And then you get to Corinth and even Acts and talking about eating certain kinds of meat. Paul starts talking about eating meat sacrificed to idols, right? That's all ceremonial language.
What does that all mean? Because I like a good rare steak.
Well, let's just, can we agree that there's ceremonial stuff going on here?
Sure.
Okay? And I would argue that it's all four of these. It's not just one of them. You shall not interpret omens or tell fortunes. That's a deeply religious practice. Rounding off the hair on your temple or marring the edges of your beard. Let's stay in the ceremonial context here for a minute. This is exactly what these pagan priests would do. Why would they do this? They do it for their gods. It's the way they wanted them to look. And then the last one, making cuts on your body for the dead or tattooing yourself. Do you remember the story of Elijah and the prophets of Baal? And what did the prophets start doing?
Cutting themselves.
What are they doing? In that context, what are they trying to do?
Yeah.
And then Elijah's like, what's your God on the toilet or something? He's too busy to come and do anything for you? So, in other words, all of these are ceremonial activities going on in the context of worship. Now, it's interesting, nobody said anything about cultural, civil use. So let's think about moral use of the law here. Can you think of anything transcendent that would pertain to anything in these things that would last today?
I think kind of like a body is the mind of the God.
Okay? Okay. So you think that that could be a moral sort of a thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Some of the old church fathers would castrate themselves in order to keep themselves from having urges so that they could devote themselves better to God.
It was a legion of demons that made the demoniac cut himself.
Great point. Great point.
It seems like all of them are ways of aligning yourself with other gods. So I mean, that continues.
So here's the question I have, and I just want to think about tattooing, because it seems a little more innocuous, at least in our culture today. Anybody old enough to have lived through people coming back from World War II with tattoos and this being a stigma?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, typically they would come back with something that in and of itself wasn't that bad. They tattooed the name of their mother on their arm or something like that. But there were also symbols and things that were displayed that were not something you want to have on your body for the rest of your life. And it was just frowned upon.
It was frowned upon by the culture, right?
By the culture.
Yeah.
And, you know, they used that as a way to poke their head under the tent. And now you look around the streets and all you can see are people that have defiled their body with this stuff. It's just disgusting.
So I think that we've told ourselves as a culture, and especially as these generations have gone on to today's generation, that there's nothing spiritual at all about a tattoo. I think people have told themselves this. And somebody could maybe make the argument that there's not. But I just think it's interesting to look at some of the history of this. I believe that the people that were coming over tattooed, this is where it really became popular in our culture, was after World War II. And it wasn't from the people going over to Europe. It was from the people going over to the East.
Right.
Why does that matter? Well, it's because Europe had been Christianized, and so that was frowned upon over there too. But the East never had been. So they're going to the Philippines, they're going to Japan, they're going to all these places, and they're coming out tattoos. Now, the soldiers themselves might not have had any thought about it. But where was that coming from in those cultures? That's a question people don't ask. How about see these guys in Samoa, you know, like the whole body tattoo sort of thing that they get. Samoa's never been a Christian nation. That's some pretty amazing dances and stuff that they do. But why do people do that? Why were they doing that? My thought is it possible that cutting yourself or even tattooing yourself, because what comes out of your body when you tattoo yourself?
Blood.
Necessarily, right? The life is in the blood. There's something sacred about the blood of a human. That when we do this, I don't know that we understand the metaphysics of what's going on. You might not have anything going on in your mind physically. Like, I'm not doing this to worship a god. Okay. But what about things that you don't even understand that you're doing? Could there be a moral component to this that is eternal and lasting that we don't consider? And I'm actually not going to answer that question for you. I think it's something that I just would like people to wrestle with. I have some friends that have gotten tattoos as Christians. They couldn't care less about this, no matter if I bring it up or not. I have other friends that have gotten them, and they just deeply regret it. And because they've thought about these kinds of questions. So it's something that, just like last week with the heart valve sort of thing, this is not an issue of salvation. Has nothing to do with that. And God doesn't care if you have a million tattoos on your body. If he wants to save you, he's going to save you. And it doesn't make any difference. And if that's something that you have on you, it doesn't matter. But it doesn't erase the That's like saying that, I keep sinning, so it doesn't matter. No, it's not true. God cares if we sin or not. And I think Christians just need to do a better job of thinking through these kinds of issues. We brought this up with cremation burial many times in this class. Just an issue of, is there a Christian way to think about this or isn't there? And so I think that these are questions that we need to be at least raising so that we can be thinking through them on family levels and those kinds of things. Okay.
Well, I have a problem with the fact that we're made in the image of God, and God made us look like he wanted us to look. And to cut and mark and defile your body is, to me, just spitting in the face of God saying, I don't like the way you made me look. And I deeply resent people that do that to themselves. It makes them not the beautiful person that God made them.
I totally understand this. We've had our discussions about this before. On the other side of it, what do you do about makeup? Because you can go to a verse like Jezebel. She had all this makeup on. Why did Jezebel have the makeup on, by the way?
Her bar needed to be painted.
That's some people say. This is Jezebel. Who's Jezebel? What is Jezebel known for? She's the worship of the goddess. I mean, that's what she's doing. So I have a feeling that her makeup is probably coming in the context of that too. But yeah, the barn needs painting. That's what Mason always used to say, and Debbie's like, oh, Mason. There you go.
Tattooing my wife's name on my finger, But where do you draw the line? That's my question. Where do you draw the line? If tattooing was a form of worship and identification with a false god, and God directly tells us not to be given into that, of course you could look at every aspect of all of our lives and say, okay, we don't do that here, we don't do that you know what I mean? But to knowingly walk out and say, yeah, I'm going to do it, that's kind of a spit in God's face, if you ask me.
Yeah.
If somebody were to do it in a sense like that, where it's not a worship of a false god, but it's still an identity, though. I mean, but so is the ring, so then what? You know what I mean?
Yep, Sabrina?
And sometimes I don't think they even recognize the fact that if they're willing to put this permanently on their body, then that is something that takes center importance in their lives in some way, shape, or form.
Interesting.
And where does that fit in then with have no other gods before we would be before everything else?
It's a great question. Really, really, really good question. I think, I don't know. Do I want to keep going with this?
Yeah.
We can keep going with it, I guess, a little bit. Is it possible to separate bloodletting from religious practice? I don't know the answer to that question, honestly. I do know that if we go back to the earlier one, eating flesh with the blood in it, well, you know what? We could actually go off on that for a long time, because the way that we eat our food, that we just go and pick it up at the supermarket, the things that they do to these animals is just as immoral a practices as you can ever possibly imagine. And as Christians, we don't think twice about it. We couldn't care less. And I think that that is deeply disturbing. Because there are moral implications here of how you treat animals in the way that you kill them and the way that you drain their blood and all that kind of stuff that we've just shut our mouths as Christians. We said, well, that's for the hippies to talk about that. And I don't think so. I think that we need to do a better job of that kind of a thing as well. That said, what does Paul say about eating meat sacrificed to idols, which I think would probably go along the lines of probably most of these things? Yeah, he puts it in the category of adiaphora, things indifferent. I don't think that he means that that there aren't moral implications to it. But what he's saying is that as Christians, we need to respect where each other are at on these differences of opinion. But I also would say that he would say move to a position of strength and not weakness. And as the church, I think that we've moved into a position of weakness because we're not even talking about these questions. We're not raising the issues. We're not getting people to think about them. And we're just doing what the culture does. Do you guys remember when the Nuggets, this was about 20 years ago, every single Nugget had like as many tattoos on their body as you could have. And I remember this. So we used to call them the Thuggets. Because it's like, what is this? I mean, it was a total, almost a fad sort of a thing. You don't see it as much as you did. But they exuded that. I mean, they exuded thuggery. You just watched them play. Something really weird about it. Ed?
I was just going to refer to the old days, maybe even before me, doctors used to let blood to heal people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that immoral?
Yeah, I mean, it's what's the purpose of what are you doing it for? Leeches to suck out poison or, you know, whatever you want. Yeah, yeah. Great little side question to what we're talking about.
All I can say, I go to 7-Eleven.
So I don't want to make this too simplistic because I think it's more complicated than what I'm going to make it. But as a general way of thinking about the West, have you noticed that the old Vikings idea is coming back in all, like with vengeance in the movies and stuff like that? Everywhere. All kinds of Viking shows. I mean, I love it because that's my heritage. But at the same time, this is utter paganism, guys. Utter paganism. And somehow, over the course of the last 2,000 years, and it differs from country to country, nation to nation, when the church came in, those kinds of practices diminished. They didn't increase, and they didn't stay the same. Because the Christians went in there and said, I think we're supposed to be a little bit different than this. Today we have a church it couldn't be any more opposite than that. We are doing everything possible in our power to be exactly like the world.
Well, I've been told that's
Twitch wrapped into your church. Sure, yeah. And then, of course, that is because we've redefined the very definition of what church is. The church is no longer what we are here for doing, learning as God's people. The church is a bunch of seekers that don't even know God anymore. And so, of course, you're going to do that when you redefine the very heart of what you are.
But we shouldn't forget that when the church came in and those cultures did change, it wasn't because they were trying to change the culture. It was because they were preaching the gospel, telling the truth. Men and women were being saved. Children were being saved, realizing who it is they must worship. And they were forsaking those other forms of worship, the foreign gods, foreign religions.
Right, God changed people's hearts, and people then went out and stopped living that way, and other people said, why aren't you living this way? What's wrong with you? And that was, I mean, that's what got the earliest Christians into such big trouble, because they were getting killed left and right, because they refused to act like everybody else. That's a moral principle, I think, that's behind these particular laws that we're looking at here, that it's just really easy to just kind of say, well, all tattooing is evil, or to say, you should never get a tattoo. It's just deeper, more complicated, and we need to do a better job thinking about it. Bringing out, understanding the ceremonial and civil aspects of those, but also looking at the moral implications that are eternal and lasting. And when you do that, I think it, you know, I'm not going to say you're going to come to the same, we won't even all come to the same conclusion on these particular laws. I don't think we have to. But at least we'll be doing the same kind of thing, and hopefully that'll make us a people that are wanting to be different than the world. Yeah, Lisa. Hundred percent agree. Yep.
Question: you know when it says when Christ says, "Does not nature itself teach you?" Is that part of the?
Well, I wanted to bring that up. That is a long bunny trail, and one of the reasons I don't ever want to preach that book. But I'll just bring up this point because you're talking about cutting your hair as a man, and Paul's talking about is it not against nature to have a long hair? But think about this. Was there not a vow in the Old Testament that a man had to do where he was not allowed to cut his hair?
Yeah.
So somehow you have to make these two things jive together on a moral level. Okay? And I think that what Paul is talking about there is not moral, but it's the science of his day.
Custom?
It's more than custom. There were certain things that they believed about sex and semen and impregnation that had to do with the length of the hair of a body, believe it or not. So, I'll give you a fascinating article if you want to read it on it. It's really, really interesting.
I thought it had to do with the church not looking bizarre to the world. But now the world is bizarre.
See, the problem is you have to wrestle with the Nazarite vow if you're going to do that. And you basically have to say that God forced them to sin, which doesn't make any sense. Right? Why would God do that? Mm-hmm. Samson was disobedient when she tied him to the kitchen chair, right? She cut the hair. He wasn't supposed to have his hair cut.
But that would have singled them out and recognizable.
For what they were doing, yeah.
For what, yeah.
But that still doesn't answer the moral question. If it's a moral sin to keep your hair long, well, we got a problem. So it's got to be something else going on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's it.